Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Two people who really do appreciate the value of a good pour are Barbara Scully and Declan Buckley with us in the studio once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello. Is that like, that
doing sounds cocktails. So,
God knows what we were talking
like
about.
You know, shaking cocktails.
Yeah,
no.
That's
no.
what we were doing. Ever since my husband retired, he has become miserable with money. For the most part, I don't mind. However, the one part that's driving me mad is what he's doing with the weekly food shop. He's decided, in order to save money, that he's only buying own brand or knockoff products instead of brand names. For the likes of pasta and potatoes, I don't mind. But he's taken it to the extreme. He's buying cheap wine that tastes like nail varnish, own brand toilet paper, which is tearing the arse off me, and has even gone as far as buying red sticker chicken. Oh, God. Which has basically gone off on the day of purchase. It's driving me mad. I know he's adjusting to living on a pension, but you're well set up in life and don't need to live like this. He says it's because we need to be prepared for every eventuality, but the way it's heading, the only thing that will happen is me ending up in hospital from using sandpaper as toilet roll. He simply doesn't listen and won't seem to reason with me. I'm 65. I don't want my luxuries in life.
I wouldn't worry about ending up being in hospital with your arse in ribbons from the toilet paper. I would end up about being in hospital from salmonella from eating chicken that's about to go off.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that jumped out of that to me. I was like, please don't let him be buying the chicken that's about to go out of date. The first thing I wanted to say is that, contrary to what most people might say, I don't know how long the husband is retired. We don't know that. And he might start to relax a bit, you know, when he gets used to the fact that, as she says, that they're okay and that they can manage on the pension and that, you know, they're not about to go broke anytime. But in fairness, I often think, especially with older men, like in this generation, who very likely were the main breadwinner. That responsibility, you know, contrary to all my feminist things, but like that responsibility lies very heavily on a lot of men's shoulders who are that age. They really do. What are you smirking at over there? Stop with your smirking at me.
It's just nice to see you finally come home to roost.
Finally give up on the business.
We have 1950s Barbara Scully on the show today.
Loosen your corset and tell us more.
That's fair. I do think there are a lot of
you
men.
Are, I'm sorry, you are taking
that role.
Sense.
And I think they're not often given credit for it. And I think so I'm trying to give him that credit first and saying that that might be why he's suddenly become a bit overboard. The second thing I would say is that stop letting him be in charge of the grocery shopping. Go with him on the grocery shopping and everything then is a deal. In other words, you know, if you're buying the, well, maybe not the chicken, but if you're buying the cheap pasta, then I'm going to put in, like, you know, I don't know, whatever
bottle
it is
champagne.
She wants. A bottle, a decent bottle of wine. But the other thing is that you can buy cheap wine that doesn't taste like nail varnish.
Yes.
You don't need to spend a lot of money to buy, you know, a relatively okay bottle of wine. So I think, you know, choose your battles. As we're always saying, life is a compromise. Wheeler dealer shopping, you know, you can have that, but then can we have this? And give him just a little bit. As I say, I don't know how long he's retired, but I think maybe that once he gets used to the fact that you are okay, he'll probably kind of loosen up a little bit. I'm being really nice today.
You are.
I am.
You are
very
optimistic too. That he will change. A man in his 60s will learn new things. That happens all the time.
So. Yeah,
they're great that way.
Well, in fairness to him, he is learning new things because he's going through a kind of like a big change in his life. It is a big change, as you pointed out. He's probably had, whether or not he was the only breadwinner or not.
Yeah.
He was working and doing stuff and being in control of a certain domain that has gone away.
You think it's control issues?
And I think, I do. I think
that's why he's doing the shop now.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's about he's trying to go, I still have a value in the world. I still have usefulness.
I'm so shallow.
You are.
And innocent,
No, it's not. I mean,
I never thought of that.
Just a touch.
I never thought of that.
But from that point of view, I think, you know, it's not that it's a responsibility.
It's the patriarchy again, in other words.
No, it's not just that, though. It's about changing circumstances and shifting from one way of living to another. And that's a big change. No matter what that change is having a little bit of understanding that somebody's going through, whether or not they even know it or not, that's what's happening. I think that's kind of the first thing that jumped out to me. I do think that the control thing becoming an issue is a problem. The reason for it is understandable, but the actions, I think, that she needs to step in. One of the ways you suggested is good, that maybe she probably doesn't want to. She's at home enjoying her luxuries. She's the only delight. You go to Aldi, you go to Tesco, you go to whatever supermarket you're going to, and you spend the money. But when you come back, I'm complaining about it.
See, that's a fatal error. Like, during COVID, I always did the weekly shop in our house, right? Well, back when we were both working, we both did it. And then I was at home, so I did it. And I always remember there was a day, I don't know how long ago it was, when I was going out the door, frazzled as hell, to do the grocery shopping. And Sherwood says to me, "Enjoy yourself." And I nearly exploded. I was like, "Enjoy myself, seriously. Doing grocery shopping, are you kidding?" So once COVID hit, need no work, I said, "Right,
but
buddy.
And you're trotting out there in your heels with your little purse.
Yeah, yeah,
and a little few coins in there. Look at you.
Cash.
It must be so much fun."
Okay, enough of the 50s. Okay, that's fine. But so then during COVID, I said, "You're coming with me." But he, and maybe this is a male thing, he never understands that we actually use stuff. And he'll go, "But we bought that last week." And I go, "Yeah, but there's four of us. It's gone or it's nearly gone." But unless he doesn't replace anything unless it's gone.
Yes.
Do you know? So I'll say that's going to run out halfway through the week and there'll be ructions. Mm. No, he doesn't get it. So I can't let him do the shopping on his own because we'll end up having to do it again in the middle of the week.
It's kind of like...
Is that a men thing?
Well... It's more like, you know, understanding the price of something.
You have to be thinking about it all the time and then you don't. That is a man thing. Yeah. Absolutely. You don't think there's damn well left in the washing up liquid.
Yes, exactly.
I just wait until Friday. Oh, it's gone on Wednesday.
Yes.
Oh, who saw
Furious.
That coming?
Yeah, raging. Exactly. Yeah. And I suppose also there's the aspect of not knowing, it's like the value of that thing or the use of that thing is not the same as the price of that thing. So we have this guy here trotting around, looking for the bargains, getting the red head, thinking about the bigger picture, which is if I save 50 quid off the shop this week, in 100 years' time...
You know what you should get him involved in? Works a treat with Sherwood. This return in your yolks, the recycled machines.
Oh, yeah.
He just, I swear to God, he gets such a high out of every
week.
Does
he enjoy that?
He goes out and does that while I start the shopping. And then he comes in waving, "I've 7 quid. I can't
and
not
let him spend
this
it.
Week.
Yeah, my 8-year-old daughter enjoys that as well.
Yeah, he loves that. It gives him the greatest time ever.
How many times has he done it though? Because I think anybody's
he
done
does it
all
religiously
the, oh God,
every
oh,
single
man.
Week.
He's quite technically minded,
Jesus,
I'm sure.
Hey, how many bottles are you going through?
Plastic and cans.
It's not bottles. It's cans.
Tins. Yeah.
It's tins.
Tinnies, yeah.
So it's, no, it's not Bulmers. Tinnies. It's various
Bulmers
things.
Bulmers and...
I don't know what else
Australian
goes
beer. The two of them.
Castle 4.
One texter says, "Your men are miserable. My husband won't spend the 250 on a ticket insurance for a flight that costs 200. Why would you not?
In, go and get travel insurance letters. And have travel. You don't have to buy it per ticket. Just get a yearly travel insurance. Will cost you much less.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, in fairness to that guy, some of those things are total scammy. You know, add this. You know, do you want this and that and the other?
Oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like, you know, so,
but well, as I'm
insurance.
Always saying,
insurance
is always a waste of money until you need it.
Exactly. Yeah. Only one thing to say to that person whose husband is stinging on the shopping, online grocery shopping, just tell him it's already done when he wants to head to the supermarket. Someone else says, "Lads, I wouldn't even give my dogs almost gone off chicken. Dogs get the squits too." Thank you for sharing that.
They do.
It'll cost money to clean up, especially with the cheap toilet paper, and your fingers can't go through the cheap stuff.
But you mention how cheap it is now, because some of that toilet paper is so cheap. It's like greaseproof paper.
He's clearly trying to find his place in the household now. I think his wife's been too hard on him. And someone else says, when you retire at first, it can be really hard. It's daunting when you face the prospect of not working again and knowing you're too old to borrow money if needs be. Took me a long time to adjust because I don't imagine he feels
that's
like there's no security.
That's exactly
now.
That's one of the things I didn't get to say. I do think that there's an element of that it's kind of like, I know we feel right now that we're set up forever, but maybe we won't be and we don't have our rainy day money.
I think for most people that age, if they're lucky and they've finished their mortgage, you know, the setup for life means we have a house that's paid, which means if we need money, you're going to sell your house.
Mm. Yeah, there's that. Yeah. You know. Or we can torch it for the insurance money. Because you don't know you need insurance until you decide to set fire to your own house. Guys, I've come. So we've given that poor woman no advice at all. Really,
I know, I'm saying be a little bit, you know,
patient. But also, it's fine to have opinions, but have opinions before the fact, not after the fact.
And don't forget to go shopping on his own and then do wheeler dealer around. the shop.
Yeah.
You know, putting in that and taking out that. And the other thing is you can swap things around because men aren't that they won't notice if you take something out and put something else in its place.
Yeah.
Till it's too late.
These men you know, Barbara, I don't know.
I've come to the realization I don't know how to flirt. And I think it may be the reason I'm single. I met my ex-wife when I was 16. And after being married for 12 years, I now find myself single in my 40s. I was really looking forward to this, however. My expectations... 16. That's 16 and 12 is what? 28. My God, this man has been through some sort of time portal where he suddenly ended up in his 40s, even though he should be 28.
I think
that's weird, isn't it?
That's okay. What marriage does to you.
That's how this guy doesn't know how to
flirt. It's just the handwriting.
Let's believe him. He's in his 40s. Yeah. I was really looking forward to this. However, my expectations of dating versus the reality are very different. I think I'm the reason I'm not doing very well on dates is because I don't know how to flirt. I'm clunky with my words. I don't know how to compliment. I'm terrified I'll come across like a creep and get cancelled or whatever the equivalent is for a non-famous person. Do Barbara and Declan have any tips on how to flirt, how to act on a date, and maybe what I should be saying to women when I approach them in pubs? I really love being single, but my game is so weak. I fear I'll be single for life. Oh, my God. So, Declan, when you approach women in pubs, what do you say to them?
Well, I normally just say, by the way, I am flirting with you, just in case there's any misunderstanding. Maybe this guy's flirting with me. I'm not really sure what's going on here with his clunky language. Look, I think we're kind of sold a bit of a pup in the idea that there is a way, there is an actual specific way you can learn how to flirt or to be with people that's going to make you a knockout with the ladies. That kind of thinking leads kind of down the slippery slope to very toxic ideas like your Andrew Tate and your kind of, incel culture and all that kind of stuff that capitalizes on a very normal kind of insecurity about how to approach somebody in a non creepy way about trying to appear like you don't want to get something, but you actually kind of do want to get something, but you don't want to get something that's creepy, if you know what I mean.
You don't want to look like you want it too much, but you still want it. Yeah.
And you don't want to look like you're just trying to get something out of them, but you are trying to get off with them. So it's kind of this weird area of like, this is just casual, but I'm kind of horny kind of way. So
I'm getting scared.
Well, Barbie, good job. We're not at a nightclub my favourite song hasn't come on.
You were very kind of energised about all of that.
Because I'm feeling it, Barbara. Feeling it.
Okay.
Look, the thing about it is that a lot of people believe that there are tips. You can go online and read stuff. 90% of it is nonsense. You know.
Yeah.
Because the only real advice is if something feels authentic to the person to who you're speaking to, and it also feels welcome by the person that you're speaking to. They're the two things that need to be there. Like, I need to feel you're kind of being real about this interaction, that you're not taking the piss out of me when you're approaching me. But also, I need to feel like I care because, you know, if I'm not interested in you, the shutters come down immediately. Now, I think a lot of men feel that because most societal expectations is that men have to make that kind of approach.
Yeah.
Women get to sit there with their cocktails in the bars, kind of yesing and knowing.
Oh God, who's got to the 50s
now? Yeah, yesing and knowing.
Tell you.
No, but it's more, it is normally the guy that makes the approach. It is normally. And so, and when a guy feels that he can't make an approach without kind of doing it right, it's kind of uncomfortable. I'm a gay man. I'm not speaking about my culture. I'm speaking about the culture I've experienced, from the sidelines.
From a distance.
Yeah, watching it happen.
What's the difference in gay culture then?
Because it's not gendered, you know. Men approach men, and women approach women.
But
approach whoever they want to.
But do those rules apply though in gay culture, in the sense that don't have a line, or is there such a thing as a gay line?
Well, there's a thing called Grindr, hello. So it's kind of like, what I'm basically saying is that that's what I meant about it. It's what the authenticity of the situation is. What is it you're asking for? And am I amenable to the thing that you're asking for? And that's kind of where the real, I don't want to say negotiation, but the real interaction happens. So for straight guys approaching straight women, I think most of the women I know don't want a cheesy one-liner. They don't want to feel, and they don't want to be clawed at. They don't want, but they want to be made feel like they're attractive and sexy in some kind of way. by somebody that they think is attractive and sexy too. And that's the conditions that are required, because if you don't think they're attractive, it's unlikely that things in the first instance are going to proceed. So all I'm really saying to this guy is, don't overthink it. If you're feeling it, smile, make eye contact. If you get a chance to have a conversation, do it. Don't engage in any of these are how you control women's minds kind of things online, because that's absolute rancorous nonsense.
Yeah.
And toxic as...
There was a guy who wrote a book called The Game. His name was Neil something or other. I interviewed him years ago.
He's probably in prison now.
He was a repellent little troll. They're he was in the studio people. And he had a woman with him who looked like she was on tranquilizers or something.
That's probably how he got her.
Was definitely paid to be there. But he was
I'm laughing and I feel guilty for laughing, because that to me is like, it puts chills down my throat. Because there are people who believe there are, that's why I opened with that particular angle, because I'm saying there are people who believe there are techniques and ways to almost fool somebody into liking you. And, you know, we all do things like, you know, social things that make maybe aren't our 100% authentic self, you know, but on the level, most of us approach things kind of real.
Yeah.
And I think pretending that you can kind of come up with some magic recipe to make everybody fall for you is daft. But it's also like, going back to what I was saying, is that I think there's a lot of pressure on young men at the moment to not do it the old fashioned 1950s way, to do it in a modern way without being cancelled. Mm. And those two, it's kind of a truer quality would be where, I smiled at that girl, maybe she'll come over and talk to me.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. Even though women might pretend that it does, it doesn't happen that much.
All right. Well, I don't know, obviously, clearly, because I've been married for like 100 years.
Yeah.
And I doubt if I could ever. I don't think I ever was any good at flirting, mainly because I was 6 foot tall. And so I couldn't do the kind of like, you know, coy kind of like, you know.
But that's not what flirting is.
No, I know. But you just said a minute ago that women are more passive when it comes to flirting, and that it's the men who have to do the flirting and the women are the recipients of the flirt.
No, I'm specifically talking about the approach.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the approach. Okay. I'm not saying a woman can take complete control over flirting, sitting at a bar and just giving
that
geisha can stop a man in her tracks with her wrist.
Yeah.
All that stuff. I'm talking about the actual, you know, the initial part of an attraction is you clock eyes on somebody, and then it's the eye contact thing that lets somebody know that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
but then you have to approach.
But then you have to approach. And you've said that's kind of, again, still society expects that it's the guys who do that.
I think so,
I don't know. I have absolutely no
idea. I'd love
idea.
To believe it did. It wasn't. I haven't been in a nightclub where that's...
Yeah.
I haven't been in Coppers in weeks.
No.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, what I do agree with you with, I think your man is overthinking this.
Yeah.
I think he thinks there's some kind of like,
trick.
Here's the, you know, do this, and don't do that, and then you're away and hack. And I think authenticity is the key to it. And I think, you know, if he stops overthinking it and just relaxes and is himself, that's what most women find attractive. Humour is also, great, very
make
important.
Make them laugh and you're laughing.
Make them laugh and you're laughing. But also I think some of what you were getting lyrical about there a while ago sounded more like kind of hookup culture to me. Like, you know, I'm looking for something and are you looking for it and I'm looking for it. And I think that's not the way to go either. If he's looking for a relationship.
Unfortunately though, we live in a society where the way people meet each other is increasingly online on these apps where certain...
Yeah, but if you're just looking to get your end away, like, you know what I mean? Like, do you know, most women are, if he's looking for something more than that, don't just see it in that kind of narrow way. You've got to see it in kind of making somebody laugh, making the eye contact, having a conversation, and then seeing where it goes after that. But you're kind of very forthright that the two of you's put across about how you're looking for it, but you're not looking for it kind of thing. That doesn't, like, women pick that up a million miles off.
I know,
and
then already you're, because that's an analysis.
That's kind of creepy.
If that's in your mind when you're approaching a woman, then
I was joking about that, because what I was pointing out was that people don't like to acknowledge the kind of slightly transactional thing that happens in relationships, that it is like that. And as Sean says, if that stuff is in your head when you're approaching the situation, you're doing it all wrong.
You're doomed.
It has to be chill, it has to be natural, and it has to be, let's see how this goes.
I mean, there's nothing like the buzz of meeting somebody and actually getting on well with them, as well as finding them attractive. but actually having a great conversation.
But the kids are using apps now. They're actually on an app and they're judging somebody's physical appearance and they're swiping left immediately. And it gets into people's heads of what they look like and all that stuff. So it's way more complicated.
Yeah. There's loads of really sound advice here from some of the listeners.
Here goes.
That chap should tell the ladies that he can age 12 years in the time it takes to compose a single email. That'll impress them. Lots of people pointing out, obviously, they were going out before they got married. But that, by my calculation, they were going out for about 12 years.
Yeah.
So he took his time there as well.
He did.
Lads, a great icebreaker on a first date. Bring up cheap toilet paper. If it doesn't work, at least they'll remember you. Tell him to get a grand in cash and flash it every time he buys a drink.
Oh my God. Seriously.
That's a text from a gangster movie, obviously. Yeah. As Joe Pesci there is a regular listener. Just take practice. He's never been on the dating scene, so he's nervous like a teenager. That's probably true. Mm. Best advice I can think of is to learn to read eyes and speak through the eyes. When there's a spark in her eye, she's like, no. Yeah. I can just see him there, like, moving his eyes around, like, what is wrong with you? Now, this is sensible. This dating chat needs to try and meet women in situations where there's already common ground established. Join a club, do a course, etc. Strangers in bars, yuck.
Strangers in bars could sometimes be very exciting. I take both approach. You know, and keep all your options open.
I can flirt, and in my 60s, unsure how to proceed. While at a birthday party with friends, a woman perhaps 45 asked me for my number as she said she would phone me. Should I phone her?
Yeah.
Do you like the look of her?
As long as it's not your attractive cousin or you've even told your wife all about this and she's fine with it. Hello there. My friend and I have been workout buddies for years. We both carry a bit of weight. And I've done the likes of Weight Watchers, Slimming World and every sort of gym class under the sun together over the last few years. There's always been something nice in knowing that we are in this journey together. And when one of us falls off the wagon, it's great knowing that the other person is there to help you get back in the swing of things. It's also great to mix your metaphors. It's also great to be in these classes with someone who is the same shape as you. Now, sometimes they can be quite intimidating. Since January, my friend has lost a lot of weight. I was delighted for her, but it always frustrated me that she was losing it at a more consistent pace than me. She kept putting it down to her diet, that she just cut out certain bad foods, and that it made all the difference for her. I was so disappointed when I tried the same, but not with the same results. At a barbecue recently, I opened her fridge to see she has the weight drug Ozempic, and I was shocked. I asked her, was she on it? I saw it in the fridge. She said no. No, I'm hurt you even ask. I don't know what to do. Should I confront her or say nothing? Either way, our journey together is ruined.
Ruined.
No. God, there's so much to unpack here, right? Yeah. And actually the bottom, the final line of that makes me happy, that their journey together is ruined. Because to have, you know, a friend for years and to have been on this weight loss, in inverted commas, journey for years is really unhealthy. You know, joining Slimming World and Weight Watchers and falling off the wagon and starting all over again and the two of them, that is not a healthy hobby to have.
No.
Like, in any way. So, you know, and it's really bad for you. If you want to get fitter, and that usually will involve maybe losing some weight, you need to overhaul your lifestyle and adapt eating behaviours and exercise that you can live with in the long term.
Yeah.
I know, because I had to do it. So, you know, fatty diets and restricting yourself in the hope of losing weight and then falling off the wagon and putting it back on again, that is just an absolute and utter no-no. So I think at the end of the day, by your journey together being ruined by your friend taking Ozempic is actually a good thing for you, because I think you need to redo your strategy. This is not a hobby that is a healthy hobby to have in any way. As regards to the Ozempic, I'm not an expert on Ozempic and whether you should or you shouldn't take it. But I do know that we live in a society that is completely messed up in the head about weight loss and, you know, our appearance, especially women's, and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of, it's not really surprising that your friend doesn't want to admit to having taken it, that she's kind of going, no, look, I've just lost all this weight because I'm better than you and I've done it myself. I'd kind of be a bit more forgiving about that. But the bottom line is, give up this nonsense of, you know, this journey that you're on together, because it is deeply, deeply unhealthy.
Mainly because two people doing exactly the same exercise and exactly the same diet will not have the same results. Yeah. And that's fundamentally at the core of the stupidity here. Because, I mean, whatever about Ozempic, I agree with you. I don't know enough about Ozempic. I hear that it's amazing, marvelous drug that, you know, that has limited side effects and all that. But I don't know if that's true. That could just be what's written on the back of my fridge. But I think at the end of the day, what's really weird about this is how much of an emphasis that this person is placing on the other person in the dynamic. Now, having said that, I know within my own household that if myself and my husband do any kind of unhealthy shop down, you know, we extra biscuits or crackers or crisps or whatever, I can feel that that will have an impact on my eating habits.
Yeah.
And it's a couple thing, and that can be quite a difficult part of your personal health journey to overcome. Unless you're the one controlling what's coming into your home, that can be difficult. So that's the one area where I can see another person.
They're
another
not
person.
Sure. They're not
No, exactly.
Together.
I was just pointing out that that's the one area where I see another person having that level of an impact on your health journey. I think the idea that, by the way, that your health and well-being journey is only measured by what you physically look like is shocking.
It's shocking.
Because body shapes are naturally different. And all that stuff, you know, that's just, you're being sold, you know, an industry, you know, and that industry is pervasive and massive, and it touches everything from the fashion industry to the dieting culture and the gyms and all that
ultimately
stuff.
Ultimately, these diets, they fail, and they're set up to make you fail and feel bad, so you start all over again.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what she's done. And I would actually suggest, as I did, go and talk to a nutritionist. If you want to understand food and how to eat healthy, if you've never done it before, as I did, go and talk to a nutritionist, one or two sessions with them, and you will be armed with the information.
I think that this person also needs to take a good hard look at themselves, not to see what they weigh or what they look like, but why they feel that they can judge somebody else's like shenanigans. Trying to place the blame on your friend for using Ozempic or whatever that's a massive deflection. That's you putting your own disappointments into somebody else's blame.
Well, she's mad. Her friend lied to her.
Lied to her. Yeah, but that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I get that. But also, maybe, why does the friend lie? Is the friend lying for the reason that you suggested there, that it's all part of the society we live in, that we want to take shortcuts to get to the top of the mountain and claim that it was all our own merit?
Yeah.
Or is it really that she's going, oh, you know, it's just easier for me, whatever? I don't know.
Finding it in her fridge, unless the friend lives on her own, isn't proof that she's taken it.
She should have taken it herself.
Somebody, But I mean,
maybe that really skinny woman she shares a house with. It could be her. I agree with you. Ozempic is the easier route. Really hard for people who don't have access to it to face the reality their weight loss journey will be harder. I wish people would stop saying journey. Sorry, Barbara, but if you go to a doctor now, nowadays with weight issues, they don't look at diets anymore. It's all Ozempic and other drugs.
Well, that's equally, I mean, I would have no time for that. And certainly my doctor did not do that. I don't think all doctors do that.
I think that's a bit of a, sounds like she's judging her friend.
Yeah.
If she is a friend, she should be supporting her no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I think it's less about the judgment of the friend having lost weight and more about the fact that she lied to her blatantly, because she came straight out and asked her a question and she got what she considers to be a lie in response. And I think that hurts. If you've got a friend who's a good friend, that does hurt. But I think when you've got to be a bit more forgiving because of what we said.
You know,
these
micro lies that you can see. Oh, yeah. Did you have Botox? No, I didn't, Clodagh. All that kind of stuff. That's very much kind of, is that pure evil? Is that friendship wrecking stuff? No. Should you invest so much time in caring about whether or not your friend's beauty and appearance was kind of, I'm using square quotes, naturally obtained or whether they had interventions using modern medical, like, grow up, do your own thing and find it out for yourself.
I'm afraid we've reached the end of our advice-giving journey today. Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.